My name is Forrest Preece. August 1966, I had just turned 20. I was a junior student on Plan 2, the concentration in English. I was shooting for a career in advertising, so I was taking a few advertising and marketing courses along the way. The campus was a very relaxed place to be back then. Certainly that day, there was nothing to indicate at all anything was out of the ordinary. I think now back to the fact that I'd just gotten out of the academic center studying for a while after class before I walked over to the drugstore to have lunch with my buddies. At that time, the sniper would probably have gotten through the security gate there at 24th Street. We used to call that St. Peter's Gate, that little security stand where the UT policemen sat and let people through. So it kind of makes you wonder about the whole ephemeral nature of life, that, you know, something very evil was happening while I was just going about being a typical all-American 20-year-old kid going to class, you know. That day, our conversation went on longer. I don't know what we were talking about, but it went on longer than usual, like almost 10 minutes. We got to the check stand to pay for our food, and the lady, it was an older lady than usual, usually just one of the young ladies who cooked the hamburgers took a turn running the cash register. This was a lady with a little more authority, you know. And she told us, you guys better not go out there while she's checking us out. Somebody's shooting a gun. We're like, oh, right. We had no concept. This is 1966. I mean, mass murders had not become that prevalent at that point, you know. We of course, in our infinite wisdom, all 20-year-olds possess, we said, oh, yeah, this is nothing. So we just barged right outside the door and stood there trying to figure out what was going on. And I looked south down the street in front of the co-op. There was a crowd of at least 15 people standing there. But they were all pointing and looking across the street, so we figured something must have happened. Of course, at that point we thought, well, maybe somebody's tried to hold up the bank down at the south end of the drag, and the police have chased them up onto the West Mall or something, because these people were looking across the West Mall. I know now, in retrospect, I realized that what they were looking at was the young boy who had been on his bicycle with his cousin between the handlebars, and he was delivering American Statesmen to the various boxes around campus, and he is one of the first victims who had been shot. And that's what they were looking at, I'm sure. But at any rate, we're still trying to figure out what was going on. And then I heard some cracks off the distance, and it was like that. And we decided, oh, those are firecrackers. Some fool has some firecrackers left over from the 4th of July. He's throwing them on the mall. He's going to get in a lot of trouble. And I distinctly remember I told my friends, well, this is nothing. I'm going. And so I turned around to walk south down towards the drag, and I mean down towards the co-op, and then cross at the large crosswalk. And for some reason, I'll never know. This saved my life, though, I'm certain. It saved me from being shot. Now, I don't know where I've been killed or not, but it was like a giant invisible hand just pushed me back to keep from going any further to my right. And I turned around and just faced east again. And then about 15 seconds later, a very loud and a very forceful bullet came past my right ear, and I heard it hit something. Of course, at that point, we were running back inside the drugstore. I later realized that the bullet had hit a gentleman named Harry Walchuk, who was a 38-year-old military veteran with six children and a wife to support. He was a PhD candidate in government. There used to be a big drugstore right in the middle of the 2300 block. That has now been subdivided into three smaller stores. I think in Austin's Pizza is one of them now. Okay. And then there used to be a little drugstore just to the south, but up against the drugstore just to the south. There was a little newsstand. It was nothing more than a long hallway that had magazines and newspapers along both sides. Mr. Walchuk was standing there asking the gentleman at the little cash stand at the front of the newsstand, supposedly he had a certain magazine, may he need it for research for one of his classes or whatever, who knows. But he was standing there talking to the gentleman at his cash stand when he got shot. But that was just right to the south of the drugstore. And of course, we all ran back inside the drugstore, and I later realized the reason, I'm very convinced that the reason he didn't shoot one of us is that there's a very large, years later, decades later, I saw a photograph taken from the top of the observation deck of the tower on the observation deck, looking back down towards the drag. And there's a very large air conditioning heating unit on top of the student union building. And it even has a door in it so workmen can go in and deal with the mechanism in there. And it perfectly shielded us from the sniper's viewpoint. I mean, he could have seen our heads probably at that point, but he was shooting people in the middle of the body at that point. Whereas the newsstand was perfectly exposed. I mean, it was just that much of a fine line between that and, you know, it blocked his vision, in other words. I didn't realize it at the time, but he was just laying there in the newsstand. I mean, of course, I couldn't see. I mean, it's just, you know, my field of vision was just right across to the student union building. Mm-hmm. You know, I had no idea somebody had actually been shot. I heard it hit something, but I didn't know what it was. That's where he was until about 30 minutes later, an ambulance wheeled up. A very large man, bearded, fell in all in black. I remember that, came barreling across the street. He had seen what, from his vantage point, he could see what was going on Guadalupe. You know, he was east, looking back west. And he came over there and flagged the ambulance down and then helped the stretcher bearers get Mr. Walchuk into the ambulance. He died like 2 hours later, as I understand, at the Brackenridge emergency room. He had two of the best surgeons Austin had to offer working on him, but they just couldn't save him. I mean, it was such a huge wound in his abdomen, and he lost a lot of blood at that point. So, yeah. Oh, it still kind of pains me to talk about all that, but yeah. Mm-hmm. Nobody had a radio on at that point. We got back inside, and at that point, somebody had sense enough to turn on a little transistor radio, and that's what the rest of us were listening to in the store during the whole, the rest of the rampage. We could hear Neil Spells saying, if you're in the University of Texas area, take cover. If you're not in the University of Texas area, don't go anywhere close to it, you know, mm-hmm. because there's someone acting as a sniper on top of the university tower. Then it all became very clear to me. Even when we got back inside the building, I had no idea where the shot. I knew it was coming from somewhere on campus back towards the drag, but I had no idea that there was somebody on top of the tower. I thought maybe it was on top of the student union building or something. Mm-hmm. Of course, then it all became very evident that, well, that'd be an incredible vantage point to have if you're going to do something that evil, to be on top of the tower, you know. I remember thinking while I was in the drugstore, boy, the people that got caught out in the mall, that's just like that bridge on the St. Louis River. They just had, through fate, they just had to be at one place at the wrong time. And I'll be darned, the Time magazine the next week had that very line there, caught like the people on the bridge on the St. Louis River, you know. Mm-hmm. Joe Roddy was down, one of their reporters was down at Brackenridge, and they just went ahead and gave him the clearance to go ahead and start reading the names of the dead. And we were hearing them inside the drugstore while it was still going on. I mean, the shooting was still well under, you know, totally happening. He went running out in the middle of the drag, good-looking guy, and he turned back around, kind of gave a big smile and a thumbs-up kind of situation. Then all of us kind of said, okay, if he's going to go out there, we all will too. And it was all of a sudden, it was just a mass of humanity heading out those doors. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the strangest things. That was as strange as the rest of this stuff was. There must have been 500 of us that had been holed up all along the west side of the campus. And we were just one big block of humanity going east on the west mall towards the main mall, towards the in front of the tower. We call that the main mall back then. I think they call it the South Mall now. Anyway, it was just like lemmings to the sea. As I said, we were just kind of drawn by wanting to see what we realized from what we've been hearing on the radio, that a lot of the shooting took place in front of the tower there, and I guess we just all wanted to see it. But nobody was saying a word. There weren't any yells of Christ for retribution or anything like that. You know, nobody was screaming, get him or whatever. You know, it's just we just all realized it was over. And then another strange thing is that there was this mass of humanity of which I was a part going east and splitting us. I got right about in front of the academic center here. There were three going the opposite direction. There were three men. It was, there was a tall APD officer on the left. There was a APD officer who was just obviously in a state of shock. That's Martinez. I could see his nameplate. It looked like somebody had hosed him down with a fire hose. His teeth were chattering. His eyes were, you know, the thousand-yard stare, the whole bit. I mean, and there was another gentleman, older gentleman in a white shirt on his left, my right, holding him up saying, "You did okay, buddy, you did okay. All right, you're okay, man. Okay, you know, just settle down. Oh, you're okay, man." You know, and all of us, of course, said, "Oh, my God. He must have been in all the action upstairs, you know." But most, it was just like it was a silent wall of people. We were all just in a state of being stunned. I guess I'm not going to say shock. That's too harsh a term, too strong a term. But, yeah, it was just strange. Of course, we got there, and the main mall looked like there were some sights I wish I'd never, some things I wish I'd never even seen. That, you know, he was obviously using bullets that were designed to do maximum damage to people's bodies. I'll say that. And then I saw down on the Internet Campus Drive the nose of a car that was painted this maroon color. And I'm an old Austin kid. I knew there was only one car in town painted that color. That's the Red Rover unit from KDBC Radio. And I said, "Oh man, okay. I wonder. I can hear something about what's going on if I go over there." I went dog trotting over there, and sure as heck, here was Neil Spelce in the doorway of the car with his microphone in his hand. And I recognized him from, he'd also been a television newscaster, so I recognized him from seeing him on the tube. So came up, stood beside me. We were just within inches of Neil while he was on the air. And then somebody one of his colleagues back at the station said, "Okay, Neil, I'm paraphrasing. I don't remember the exact words, but he says something like, "Okay, Neil, we're going to break in. Here's the name that everybody in town's been wanting to know for the last hour and a half. Is Charles Joseph Whitman has been identified as the sniper on top of the tower." And that's the first I'd ever heard that name. You know, I had no idea who he was or what. You know, of course, motivation's still a question. Mm-hmm. Well, the next day, I mean, I'm such a type A. I tried to go on to class. I know it sounds crazy now, but I looked at the tower. I didn't have a watch. I looked at the tower and saw, okay, it's about 1:35 or 40 at that point. And I said, "Man, gosh, wherever they're trying to have a class." I went over to the business economics building over on the southeast edge of the campus, you know. In summer school, you can't afford to miss a class, man. And I said, and one other guy showed up. We stood outside the classroom, twiddled our thumbs for about 10 minutes. We finally said, "Oh, well, to heck with it." And went on home. I went back to, I was living with my parents back then. Went home, of course, turned on the TV and the radio and started listening to all the aftermath of the whole thing. But the next day, they closed campus down. I didn't think they were going to close the academic center. I thought, well, surely I can go up there and study. And it was locked up tighter than a drum, so I said, well, the heck with it. And I got a copy of the Daily Texan on the way back there. They had a stack outside the student union there on the big porch. And I said, I might as well read this Texan for a while. I'm just a little 20-year-old kid wanting to go to class. Why are you shooting at me? And the whole concept, and that, like you said, I mean, you're so right. Now it's been analyzed to death. At that point, it was something totally new. I had no clue about what was really going on here. I guess... It didn't even occur to me, really, at that point. Some people said, "Oh, well, you know, it was the big SDS thing, anti-Vietnam." I mean, that would have anything to do with shooting innocent people. I mean, there were protesters around campus, and that's, yeah, but I had no idea. It was just somebody that had just, a sociopath that had gone up there and started shooting innocent people. No, believe me, I was searching for a motive at that point, but I sure couldn't figure one out. But it was a talk, obviously, to say the least, it was the talk of Austin for about a week. Of course, I also, as long as we're talking about it all, the contrast between what happened here and what happened at Virginia Tech, for instance. There, I think they shut down the campus for several days, if not a week. And they had grief counselors. They had grief counselors back then. I guess you wanted to go to the psychiatrist at the health center, you could have, but nobody was really advertising. I mean, this was at Virginia Tech, they made it very public and widespread that they have these grief counselors and you want to go talk about it all, you know. I mean, I was in the Longhorn Band that, like I said, that semester, and we were all kind of wondering maybe we're going to do a little memorial service or something. There were a bunch of us. We had regular rehearsals during the summer. We could have certainly, on a moment's notice, we could have been brought together to play, you know, a few hymns or something like that, you know. But there was nothing like that at all. No, it took till 1996 for there even to be a memorial of any kind at UT. President Faulkner finally, was it 96? It was 99. I think it was 99. That's right. Yeah. When they put together the little remembrance garden over here, the little turtle ponds, they dedicated it. And it actually took them till 2007 to put up a little 13-inch by 9-inch sign on a rock, you know, a little plaque on a rock. I'm just kind of, it is a rather stark contrast, let's say that, between, man, that memorial at Virginia Tech is monumental. I don't know if you've seen it or not. I've seen photographs of it. I haven't seen it in person, but, I mean, they actually have a little box kind of situation for each of the people who got killed that day. And it takes up a huge amount of space on their campus, and they actually had their band show up and play at the dedication of it and all, you know, and that. They spent quite a bit of money on that thing, and we're finally getting something together here 50 years later. I know there's a committee going on to get a proper, at least a larger memorial added to the what's going on over there at the Remembrance Garden. I guess the only really lingering effect of it to me has been that every time I look at the UT Tower, I think about it. Now, where I replay the whole 96 minutes or not in my brain, not usually, but when I see it, I see the tower. I mean, it's 50 years later, I still think about it every time I see this tower. I don't want to see people carrying guns on campus, but it is a fact. A lot of guys went home and got their deer rifles, and they were the reason he couldn't get up over the top of the observation deck anymore. He had to start using the drain spouts. And all of his kills came within the first 25 minutes or so before he was opposed by return gunfire. But that really isn't campus carry. I mean, that was guys going home and getting their long guns, getting their rifles, okay, and coming back and returning fire. If you had a pistol, that's not going to do you any good from the ground. I mean, so I don't think that's really, it's apples and oranges, really, what we're talking about here. That unless you're advocating having people carry rifles to class, and I don't think anybody was going to do that, you know, it wouldn't be much use. I mean, handguns wouldn't be much use or no use whatsoever from the ground. Mm-hmm. If somebody's on top of the tower again, of course, I don't think there's no way that's going to happen again.